He didn't tell Eve when he tempted her in Eden what the consequences were going to be. He wouldn't dare. Remember the fruit, whatever the symbolism means, it was pleasant. And Eve made the mistake of, under the devil's instigation, looking too long. So it's the source, the psychological source of all temptation. I might mention, without dwelling on this, that the source of all our thinking is, as human beings, from the imagination. We have sense experience from outside of us, then imagination, which is internal experience inside of us, and then from that internal imagination, thoughts are, as we say, abstracted. Abstraction is simply the power we have of abstracting from the particularities of an experience and drawing out some general, as we call it, idea. The abstraction makes it an idea. There are four steps to every action. Step number one, sense experience from the outside. Step number two, the imagination, which is the internal reliving, reproducing of the internal experience. Third, abstraction, thought, which derives from the imagination. No imagination, no thought. And fourth, desire. No thought, no desire. Once more. No sensation, no imagination. No imagination, no thought. No thought, no desire. But you see, the imagination is a key stage in that process of desiring. Fourth, the need of control. Otherwise, our spiritual life becomes incontrollably distracted. Recollection of spirit, of which all the spiritual masters talk, is, in essence, control of the imagination. Because knowing by now that certain images, used in the very broad sense of covering every internal reproduction, that certain past experiences should be sustained and others should be let go. And the one past experience that if we wish to remain recollected, that we must sustain is, well, the thought of God, the experience of God. Either I strive to recall the past experience of God, or I will not now be praying. So the fourth reason why there's need for control is not to distract ourselves spiritually. Our minds will be filled with all kinds of secular experiences unless we control the imagination. And when people enter the religious life, I know because time was when I entered. I remember after about 2 months, my past experiences began to flow over me, and I thought of the pleasant things that I used to have, as I said, outside. And I began to pity myself. Woe is me, look to the four walls, looked at the desk in front of me, and I thought to myself, why do you do it? So I wrote to the priest who really got me in, and I told him how homesick I felt, left a widow and mother behind, friends, all kinds of wonderful things, and here I am. Well, I've never got such a blistering letter from any priest. You so-and-so. Stop thinking those thoughts. And if a person is even going to persevere in their religious life, they've got to stop thinking about their past experience, because as Christ himself tells us, we go in the direction of that which we love. And we love that which is in our minds and on our hearts. If you don't want to love the world, keep the world out of your imagination. Makes sense, doesn't it? And nobody, not even the good God, will save a vocation where the person does not control their imagination. Now, of course, there must be enough pleasant things in the religious life to appeal and attract, and as it were, compete with other attractions which keep rising in the imagination. Part of perseverance in the religious life is starving the secular imagination. The vocabulary may be a bit strange, but I trust you know what I'm trying to say. Fifth need for control. There is nothing that more constantly and sadly interferes with prayer than an uncontrolled imagination. What are distractions in prayer except the imagination activated by thoughts and desires that have nothing to do with the prayer? Finally, the lack of control of the imagination weakens self-discipline in every aspect of human life. There is no possibility of controlling any other faculty unless the imagination is controlled. Now, a bit of experience that took me 30 years in the priesthood to learn. You'd never guess this. The men in class, that's we 3, 4, 5, 6 of us. I guess men think that women have the more active imagination. That is not true. Did you know that? Who writes the poetry? There just couldn't be a Mrs. Shakespeare. Most of the poetry, or there are a few exceptions, but they are exceptions. Most of the poetry of the world, and that's from the dawn, I'm not sure how far back it goes, of history. Most of the poetry has been written by men. Scientific theories all begin in the imagination. I repeat, it took me 30 years to learn this. One reason, I suppose, that I deal so much with religious women, having lived with a widowed mother till I left to join the order at the age of 22, I think I know the heart of a woman. Women are the realists. Men are the dreamers. Honest. I remember four couples at Mass. Every day I promised them to try to save the marriages. And in each case, the man, he is unwilling, as a husband, to work with the wife who has her feet on the ground. At any rate, we all need to control the imagination. It is much more active in men. But, and this too I say, sadly, I think many women religious have been misled in the church today by speculative men theologians. When I read men like Hans Kuhn or Raymond Brown or Richard McBrien, I call it because it is theological fiction. Really. So women can be misled. Self-discipline begins with controlling the imagination. Now the method of control. I don't think I need to apologize for the length of time we're spending on this blessed imagination. Let me tell you. It is, I think, worth it. I've got 8 suggestions for controlling the imagination, and I stopped at 8 because I reached the bottom of the page. First, if we ourselves or in favor of others want to control the imagination, the first place to begin is being convinced how important control here is. This is not child's play. It's not easy. No adjective I can use would be too strong. It is of consummate importance. Note, I wish to repeat, this is not the suppression of the imagination. It can't be. Life would stop. It is not denying the imagination. It is not suppressing the imagination. It's controlling it. First, then, being convinced of the importance of imagination control. Second, recognize how dangerous is an uncontrolled imagination. Reread the Gospels in this light, and you will be surprised what insight you will gain from some of the teaching of Christ. What does Christ tell us? Where does all sin begin? In the heart. In his Sermon on the Mount, you've been told you will not commit adultery, but I tell you, if a man even looks lustfully at a woman, he's already committed adultery with her in his heart, in the imagination. We are not only not to do, say, physical or bodily injury to another person, we are not even to think, notice? We must control our interior imagination in not thinking unkindly. I don't know how many times I've told people, you have a sharp tongue, an asp's tongue. But unlike an asp, you have a free will. You either control your unkind thoughts, or you will never control your unkind speech. Therefore, recognize, and the connection must be made by the person himself, to see the relationship between control of those inside images, fancies, and their expression. Third, act immediately once you recognize that a dangerous memory or image occurs inside of my mind. Immediately change it to a good one. And by the way, that's the formula. The formula is not get rid of the evil image or evil memory. You don't get rid of evil images or evil memories except by substituting good ones. And that is not a trivial piece of advice. Fourth, plan your actions. And part of the planning, of course, is that I plant in my memory, in my mind, in my imagination. Otherwise, it will never carry into act what I've decided to do. I've got to prime myself. I've got to, as it were, work myself up. Plan your actions. Fifth, get going. Depending on the nature of what's on my imagination, and I repeat and keep repeating, it is not only the picture-making faculty. The imagination covers all kinds of past experiences that are somehow reproduced. The secret of achievement is get going. I give my students some work to do, and they come back with just a trickle of what I've expected them to do in the time at their disposal. And often, if they're honest, they tell me, it took me so long to get started. The desk hasn't been dusted for 2 weeks. They've got work to do. They suddenly notice the dust on the desk. Now, it's a good thing to dust the desk and to straighten things out. But by the time I've done those physical chores, half my, say, speaking as a teacher, study time is gone. Get going. Sixth, concentrate on what you are doing. I don't think there is a more important recommendation in the spiritual life than the following. There may be others as important, but I know of none more important. Let me give you the Latin and put it on the board. Age quod facis, which being translated means do what you're doing. Which is a pathetic admission that unless we make a strong effort to do what we're doing, we will allow our imagination to interfere with what we're doing and to both do what we're doing and do what we shouldn't be doing. Age quod agis. One of the first things we learned in the novitiate, one of Ignatius' favorite adages, It's an adage that I think we can all both learn for ourselves and insist that others follow. Concentrate. I was lecturing at Trinity College last week on, of all things, Buddhism. Well, they asked me to, and I know a few things about Buddhism, so they listened. And I told them, as I must have told some of you in class somewhere along the line, I've taught Orientals over the years, Jesuits from Asia. I have found them as a class far superior as a class to Western students. Intellectually superior. And one reason, after years of teaching them and talking to them and learning about their culture, one thing I've learned, in the Orient, because there is so much less preoccupation with material things, the mind is more concentrated in what it's doing. That's why I'm told by people in New York that the Japanese are far ahead of us in economy, in production. They are, I'm told, years ahead of us in the scientific manufacture of machinery, like the automobile. They concentrate. I've been told by any number of people in administration, in business, or industry, the hardest thing to get out of a person these days is 8 hours of honest work a day. They've got to take a break for this and a break for that. They don't concentrate. They don't do what they're doing. Until in the West, we have coined this cynical definition of work. Work is that which a man would rather not be doing if he could be doing something else. And I think that goes not only for physical work, but for prayer, for intellectual effort, for you name it. In any case, we are the most imagination-ridden society in history. The Easterners describe Western society as a dream world. Can't wait until they get home from work. So what do? Turn on the television set. An average in the United States now, man, woman, and child, 20 hours a week of viewing television. In the meantime, the real world is collapsing around us. So concentrate on what you're doing. Number 7. Since we're talking to religious and about religious life and how to help those who have entered religious life maintain their spirit and grow indeed in the spiritual life, I recommend number 7, cultivate sacred memories. I believe one of the most neglected faculties in the Western world is the memory. Now, this should be part of the training, I think, from the early days in the religious life. For example, certain prayers simply must be memorized. Scripture. There are some 24 Muslim religious orders, just for the record. in the world. A number of them require as a condition for the persons taking their vows, and they take vows, that they listen, that they have memorized the Quran. Now, the Quran is not quite as big as our Bible, but it's a pretty big book. When I started teaching the Missionaries of Charity in New York, I think I've told you this, from almost our first day of class, and this is now 4 years, I required of them to memorize passages from the New Testament. At first it was every week about 10 or 12 verses. They complained to the superior. She complained to me. She said, "Father, this is wonderful. But I think it's getting to the sisters. Could we cut it down?" So now we have it every 2 weeks. And it's usually not 10 or 12, it's closer to 6 or 7 verses. But then, after 2 weeks, it used to be for 2 years every week, they all know they have uniform little pads which they distribute among all the sisters, and we say our opening prayer, and then they write out the memory. We are now, because Mother Teresa asked me to teach the sisters, for a whole year, the theology of the Sacred Heart. 2.5 hours a week for 48 weeks. That's a lot of theology of the Sacred Heart. It's good for me too. So we're starting, we began in September. We're starting with the 4 chapters of Christ's sermon at the Last Supper. And we're pretty well finished with the 1st chapter. And they tell me, this is the contemplative branch of the Missionaries of Charity. They tell me it is simply indispensable. They just cannot imagine, pardon the word, they cannot imagine what their spiritual life would be unless they had their memories filled with the words of Christ. Doesn't that make sense? They've got everybody else's words in mind, except those of the Master.
I was going to just say, Father, I do know a community of Cistercian monks that actually, I would say 90% of them know the Psalms by heart. All the Psalms by
this,
heart.
I want to... There are a certain number of things in the practical order that I can recommend and urge with all my heart. I would urge this with all my heart. I've taught for too many years. I know that for most people, intelligent people, their memories are simply uncultivated. Grown men and women with the memories of a 6-year-older. And the result, there are many results, but one result is, they cannot draw on things which are within them when they need them. We think with the mind we've got. The mind which we come into the world with is a blank. Memory furnishes that mind with sacred things to think about. The same with saints. For years I used to do this. Now I'm, you might say, capitalizing on the past experience. I think I told you I tried to read from the life of the saint every day. I have a good life of the saint over the rectory there. And, pardon me for saying this, sometime I start reading it when I come back at night, and I wake up at 2 a.m. with the life of the saint on the floor next to me. But For years, in reading the lives of the saints, I would cull favorite passages from them. There is nothing that more surely cements a past mental experience than writing it out. I could talk for the rest of the day about memorized passages from the saints. And finally, nourish holy images. This means, as we said at the beginning, and this is our last recommendation, since everything begins outside the mind, and since my imagination will be no better or worse, no more secular or sacred than what comes in from outside the mind, make sure that those images are nourished by sacred things outside, sacred pictures, statues, spiritual reading. Constantly long pause, remind yourself of things sacred. One of the principal functions of the religious habit. The imagination, and this is no exaggeration, is affected by how we're dressed. If you're dressed like a secular, you're going to think like a secular. You're going to have the imagination of a secular. If you dress like a religious, you're going to think like a religious. You're going to have the imagination of a religious. That's why when people tell you that the habit doesn't make any difference, well, I tell them, it probably doesn't make any difference to you anymore. Because how people dress reveals how they think. Secular dress is the proof positive symbol of a secular mind. And with that, I think we should stop with the control of the imagination. Otherwise, I would not be living up to my own recommendations.
This concludes Father John Hardin's talk on the subject, How to Control the Imagination.